Chapter 87. Took it up and showed considerable humor in appraising the furniture, inquiring whether such an article was paid for, what it had originally cost, and the like. In all of this, he was, as he considered, desperately hard on Montague, and very demonstrative of his own brilliant parts. Some champagne punch gave a new, though temporary, fillip to the entertainments of the evening. For after leading to some noisy proceedings, which were not intelligible, it ended in the unsteady departure of the two gentlemen of the world, and the slumber of Mr. Jonas upon one of the sofas. As he could not be made to understand where he was, Mr. Bailey received orders to call a hackney coach, and take him home, which that young gentleman roused himself from an uneasy sleep in the hall to do, it being now almost 3 o'clock in the morning. Is he hooked, do you think? Whispered Crimple, as himself and partner stood in a distant part of the room observing him as he lay. Said Tig, in the same tone. With a strong iron, perhaps. Has Nadgett been here tonight? Yes. I went out to him. Hearing you had company, he went away. Why did he do that? He said he would come back early in the morning, before you were out of bed. Tell him to be sure, and send him up to my bedside. Hush. Here's the boy. Now, Mr. Bailey, take this gentleman home, and see him safely in Chisallow, here. Why, Chuzzlewit, halloa. They got him upright with some difficulty, and assisted him downstairs, where they put his hat upon his head, and tumbled him into the coach. Mr. Bailey, having shut him in, mounted the box beside the coachman, and smoked his cigar with an air of particular satisfaction, the undertaking in which he was engaged having a free and sporting character about it, which was quite congenial to his taste. Arriving in due time at the house in the city, Mr. Bailey jumped down, and expressed the lively nature of his feelings, in a knock the like of which had probably not been heard in that quarter since the great fire of London. Going out into the road, to observe the effect of his feat, he saw that a dim light, previously visible at an upper window, had been already removed, and was traveling downstairs. To obtain a foreknowledge of the bearer of this taper, Mr. Bailey skipped back to the door again, and put his eye to the keyhole. It was the merry one herself, but sadly, strangely altered. So careworn and dejected, so faltering and full of fear, so fallen, humbled, broken, that to have seen her quiet in her coffin would have been a less surprise. She set the light upon a bracket in the hall, and laid her hand upon her heart, upon her eyes, upon her burning head. Then she came on towards the door with such a wild and hurried step that Mr. Bailey lost his self-possession, and still had his eye where the keyhole had been when she opened it. Aha! Said Mr. Bailey, with an effort. There you are you? What's the matter? Ain't you well, though? In the midst of her astonishment as she recognized him in his altered dress, so much of her old smile came back to her face that Bailey was glad. But next moment he was sorry again, for he saw tears standing in her poor dim eyes. Don't be frightened, said Bailey. There ain't nothing the matter. I've brought home Mr. Chuzzlewit. He ain't ill. He's only a little swipey, you know. Mr. Bailey reeled in his boots, to express intoxication. Have you come from Mrs. Todgers? Asked Mary, trembling. Todgers, bless you. No. Cried Mr. Bailey. I haven't got nothing to do with Todgers. I cut that connection long ago. He's been a dining with my governor at the West End. Didn't you know he was a coming to see us? She said, faintly. Oh yes. We're heavy swells too, and so I tell you. Don't you come out, a catching cold in your head. I'll wake him. Apostrophe Mr. Bailey expressing in his demeanor a perfect confidence that he could carry him in with ease, if necessary, opened the coach door, let down the steps, and giving Jonas a shake, cried we've got home, my flower. Tumble up then. Apostrophe apostrophe, he was so far recovered, as to be able to respond to this appeal, and to come stumbling out of the coach in a heap, to the great hazard of Mr. Bailey's person. When he got upon the pavement, Mr. Bailey first butted at him in front, and then dexterously propped him up behind, and having steadied him by these means, he assisted him into the house. You go up first with the light, apostrophe said Bailey to Mr. Jonas, and we'll foller. Don't tremble so. He won't hurt you. When I've had a drop too much, I'm full of good natter myself. Apostrophe, she went on before, and her husband and Bailey, by dint of tumbling over each other, and knocking themselves about, got at last into the sitting room above stairs, where Jonas staggered into a seat. There. Apostrophe apostrophe said Mr. Bailey. He's all right now. You ain't got nothing to cry for, bless you. He's righter than a trivet. Apostrophe the ill-favored brute, with dresser eye, and sodden face, and rumpled hair, sat blinking and drooping, and rolling his idiotic eyes about, until, becoming conscious by degrees, he recognized his wife, and shook his fist at her. Ah! Apostrophe apostrophe cried Mr. Bailey, squaring his arms with a sudden emotion. What, your wishes, are you? Would you though? You'd better not. Apostrophe apostrophe, pray, go away. Apostrophe apostrophe said Mary. Bailey, my good boy, go home. Jonas. Apostrophe apostrophe she said, timidly laying her hand upon his shoulder, and bending her head down over him. Jonas. Apostrophe, look at her. Apostrophe apostrophe cried Jonas, pushing her off with his extended arm. Look here. Look at her. Here's a bargain for a man. Apostrophe, dear Jonas. Apostrophe apostrophe, dear devil. Apostrophe apostrophe he replied, with a fierce gesture. You're a pretty clog, to be tied to a man for life, you mewling, white-faced cat. Get out of my sight. Apostrophe apostrophe, I know you don't mean it, Jonas. You wouldn't say it, if you were sober. Apostrophe, with affected gaiety she gave Bailey a piece of money, and again implored him to be gone. Her entreaty was so earnest, that the boy had not the heart to stay there. But he stopped at the bottom of the stairs, and listened. I wouldn't say it, if I was sober. Apostrophe apostrophe retorted Jonas. You know better. Have I never said it when I was sober? Apostrophe, often, indeed. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she answered through her tears. Harkee. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Jonas, stamping his foot upon the ground. You made me bear your pretty humors once, and ecod I'll make you bear mine now. I always promised myself I would. I married you that I might. I'll know who's master, and who's slave. Apostrophe, heaven knows I am obedient. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the sobbing girl. Much more so than I ever thought to be. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Jonas laughed in his drunken exultation. What? You're finding it out, are you? Patience, and you will in time. Griffins have claws, my girl. There's not a pretty slight you ever put upon me, nor a pretty trick you ever played me, nor a pretty insolence you ever showed me, that I won't pay back a hundredfold. What else did I marry you for? You two. Apostrophe he said, with coarse contempt. It might have softened him indeed it might to hear her turn a little fragment of a song he used to say he liked, trying, with a heart so full, to win him back. Oh ho. Apostrophe apostrophe he said, you're deaf, are you? You don't hear me, eh? So much the better for you. I hate you. I hate myself, for having been fool enough to strap a pack upon my back for the pleasure of treading on it whenever I choose. Why, things have opened to me now, so that I might marry almost where I liked. But I wouldn't. I'd keep single. I ought to be single, among the friends I know. Instead of that, here I am, tied like a log to you. Pa! Why do you show your pale face when I come home? Am I never to forget you? Apostrophe, how late it is. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she said cheerfully, opening the shutter after an interval of silence. Broad day, Jonas. Apostrophe, broad day or black night, what do I care? Apostrophe, apostrophe was the kind rejoinder. The night passed quickly too. I don't mind sitting up, at all. Apostrophe, sit up for me again, if you dare. Apostrophe, apostrophe, growled Jonas. I was reading, apostrophe, she proceeded, all night long. I began when you went out, and read till you came home again. The strangest story, Jonas. And true, the book says. I'll tell it you tomorrow. Apostrophe, true, was it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Jonas, doggedly. So the book says. Apostrophe, was there anything in it, about a man's, being determined to conquer his wife, break her spirit, bend her temper, crush all her humors like, so many nutshells kill her, for aught I know? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Jonas. No. Not a word, apostrophe, she answered quickly. Oh. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he returned. That'll be a true story, though, before long, for all the book says nothing about it. It's a lying book, I see. A fit book for a lying reader. But you're deaf. I forgot that. Apostrophe, there was another interval of silence, and the boy was stealing away, when he heard her footstep on the floor, and stopped. She went up to him, as it seemed, and spoke lovingly, saying that she would defer to him in everything, and would consult his wishes and obey him, and they might be very happy, if he would be gentle with her. He answered with an imprecation, and, not with a blow? Yes. Stern truth against the base-souled villain, with a blow. No angry cries, no loud reproaches. Even her weeping and her sobs were stifled by her clinging round him. She only said, repeating it in agony of heart, how could he, and lost utterance in tears. O woman, God beloved in old Jerusalem, the best among us need deal lightly with thy faults, if only for the punishment thy nature will endure, in bearing heavy evidence against us, on the day of judgment. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.